The EMS Educast is a podcast by and for EMS educators. Every week, our panel of education experts hosts a program that brings you the latest and greatest in EMS education technology, methods, and techniques. Your hosts will regularly bring you guests from all over the world to tell you about innovative EMS education programs and experiences in other places. Join us each week for the EMS Educast. And visit www.emseducast.com to subscribe with iTunes or the RSS feed, listen to archived shows, and view future show descriptions. The EMS Educast.
Welcome, everyone, to the EMS Educast. On behalf of Rob Terrio and Bill Toon, I'm one of your co-hosts, Greg Fries. As always, we're thrilled to have you listening into this show. Maybe you found us because you've listened to every previous show, or you stumbled across the website or the Facebook page recently, or you found us in iTunes. Regardless, we're glad you're here. If you're a longtime listener, you might be thinking, boy, it seems like the EMS Educast doesn't happen as often as it used to, and that's probably a fair assessment. In general, we're trying to put out two new episodes a month versus the three or four we did in the past. It's not that we've run out of topics or great, interesting people to talk to. It's just, it seems like despite all my efforts, life just gets busier and busier. And Rob, I imagine you feel the same pressure I do.
No, none whatsoever.
You're so good. Well, what's your secret then?
No secrets. I'm busy too.
Okay. Well, and so that's Rob Terrio to my north in Ontario, and then to sort of the south and west, Bill Toon. Welcome back, Bill.
Oh, hi, good evening, and good to be here.
And tornado season is alive and well in Kansas these days, correct?
Yeah, I think we set a new record. I can't remember what day last week, but we had 100 tornadoes in one day.
And, you know, something caught my ear on the radio this afternoon. They were talking about, are we really having more tornadoes, or are we just better at spotting and reporting the tornadoes that are happening? And what's your opinion?
No opinion.
Okay. The scientists on the radio show said we're having better reporting and spotting, not more tornadoes. And that was pretty intriguing to me. So, and then from a place that I don't think ever has a tornado, we're really glad to welcome back to the EMS Educast, Catherine.
Thank you for having me. And I think when winds, you know, pick up just a tad, we start complaining that it feels like a tornado.
Yeah, so you're in San
we're
Diego.
We're spoiled. Yes, I am in San Diego.
No tornadoes. Supposed to be, what they call it, the Santa Anas. Is that it? When it blows from the east to the coast.
Yes, we do. We do get.
Before I remember, I have two quick announcements to make before we move into our show proper. The first is I got an email from NAMSI that they've now trained more than 5,000 EMS educators in their EMS educator courses, and that's a pretty remarkable accomplishment. So congratulations to NAMSI and all the educators that have trained in that. If we had done that Price is Right style, closest without going ever over, I never would have guessed anywhere near 5,000. So that's an amazing accomplishment, so congratulations to them. And then the second thing, and we'll put this link in the show notes, is the Inverhills Community College in St. Paul EMS Academy is about to graduate, I believe, their fifth class, and they had a show about that on Minnesota Public Radio this week, and we've had David Page on the show a couple times to talk about what I consider to be an amazing EMS education program for low-income and disadvantaged youth in St. Paul and Minneapolis. And in this article, 70% of their graduates have gone on to have careers in healthcare and all sorts of different settings. So tip of the hat and congratulations to them. It's just really incredible for both organizations. So with those two announcements out of the way, glad to have Catherine back. Catherine was on maybe a little more than a year ago to talk about bullying in the workplace and EMS education, and we're going to revisit some of that and also just talk about workplace violence tonight, another area of specialty. But Catherine, I want to let you introduce yourself and tell our audience about who you are and the work you do, and just we'll go from there.
Sure. Thank you. I'm the president of a consulting and training firm called Civility Partners, and Civility Partners focuses on building positive workplaces. So we offer, you know, training around communication skills, diversity, and addressing those sorts of negative behaviors. And then I'm a subject matter expert in workplace bullying as well, and have written a lot of articles on it. I actually have a book coming out in the summertime, so that'll be neat. And so I have another website called NoWorkplaceBullies.com, and that's kind of an educational website for anybody interested in that topic. And so I do a lot of training and speaking on that as well.
Maybe just if you could just share with us some of your background of your education and how you got to specialize in this area.
Yeah, I worked as an HR manager at a nonprofit here in San Diego, and one of my peers, we were both directors reporting to the president. He was essentially a bully, and I couldn't figure out why the president wouldn't address the behavior with him, and I could see as the HR manager what kind of damage it was causing the organization. And I started getting my master's degree while I was working there and stumbled across this idea of workplace bullying and ended up doing most of my research in grad school on that topic. So I kind of joke that I have a master's degree in workplace bullying. And so it just took off from there. It really was therapeutic for me to do all that research. And from there, I started my business and have remained, you know, up to date on the academic research. And I've presented my own research at a few different conferences, and I'm active in the International Association for Workplace Bullying. So, you know, it's definitely a topic that's taking off and in the business rhetoric. So hopefully I can help organizations deal with it.
And what kind of organizations seek out your services?
You know, I've worked with a variety, you know, small business, nonprofits, government agencies, a couple universities and community colleges. So it's any organization could potentially have bullying. I've worked with American Red Cross, Kaiser Permanente. So I've had a huge array of clients.
Do the issues remain fairly similar over time, or from workplace to workplace, or is there sort of like an evolving type of workplace bullying issues? Is there change over time?
Is there change over time with regard to what factors?
Or maybe just like the way that bullying is happening, or...
Well, I would say that, you know, of course, anytime technology advances, that offers more opportunity. So any bullying that happened, you know, in the 90s is going to be different than now. But, you know, it's really about the organization's culture, and that's really what the cause of bullying is. So generally, when people bully, they're responding to something in their organizational environment. And those different factors tend to be pretty clear. It doesn't really matter what industry you're in. So things like competition, change in the organization, or of course downsizing, which is something we've all been dealing with. You know, when the organization is very bureaucratic, that can cause a culture of bullying. Also, when you have a lot of employees who are very tenured and have been there for a long time, those people can evolve into bullies. So those factors, you know, exist in any organization, or can potentially exist in any organization. So any industry is open to having bullying, and everyone should be aware of addressing it. So that, and you know, of course, bullying can escalate into violence. I know that was something we're going to be talking about tonight. So if you could nip bullying in the bud immediately, it of course, you know, eliminates the chances that it will move into violence.
You just mentioned that, you know, maybe we can nip bullying in the bud, and whether we're talking about in a classroom context, like peer-to-peer, mm-hmm. or in the workplace, say like a fire department or EMS agency, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that work and don't work as far as trying to intervene early?
Well, I take the approach that building a positive workplace or eliminating bullying, however you want to look at it, is a three-pronged approach. So the leaders of the organization have to be setting examples and taking responsibility for setting the culture up to, you know, one that can be positive and that won't tolerate bullying types of behaviors. A policy definitely needs to be in place to back up what the leaders are trying to accomplish and hold people accountable. You can hold people accountable when you have a policy, and then the culture needs to be the focus. So in order to change culture, of course, that's a huge long list of potential action items, but some examples would be things like doing training around awareness of workplace bullying, but also training in the areas of things like positive communication. You know, doing action items that where, you know, sometimes I'll recommend to companies that their different departments each come up with an action item or some sort of project that is around some sort of positive workplace behavior. So maybe doing something like community service projects, you know, that's something where they have to collaborate. They're doing something that's altruistic. Those sorts of activities, tend to help eliminate bullying, and create a positive workplace. So you really have to focus on those three areas, though: leadership, policy, and culture, in order for nipping bullying in the bud immediately to be effective. So you know, if the culture is no tolerance for bullying, it makes it easy for somebody who feels bullied to immediately stand up for themselves, versus the culture where it appears that there is tolerance for bullying.
What do you think, like, say, in the EMS context of where, you know, you get two paramedics working together and, you know, management technique might be, well, those two don't seem to get along, so we'll just put them together so they can work it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the nature of EMS work is long, long hours with your partner in a very decentralized workplace without, like, close direct supervisor contact either.
Right.
What do you think about a strategy like that of, like, there appears to be conflict for those two people, so we'll just put them together so they can work it out?
I think leaving people on their own to duke it out is not the right path. And also, I would imagine being in EMS is highly stressful, which would exacerbate the situation for them and, you know, help the conflict to continue to get worse. So in that instance, you know, either a mediator needs to come in so that they can help those two individuals work it out, or the leaders need to come in with specific plans to help those two work through it. But just saying, well, we'll just put them together so that they can work through it is probably not the right way to go, and ultimately one person will turn into a bully, and that could potentially turn into violence. Actually, I'm thinking of a case where I was called in as an expert witness to talk about workplace bullying. It was it was two truck drivers, and they were on the road together all the time, you know, spending long hours together, and they didn't get along, and it really did escalate from just, we don't really get along, to the point where one was really bullying the other. He punched, one guy punched the other guy while he was driving, and
oh, no.
caused truck to go off the road, and, you know, all kinds of bad things could have happened. Luckily they didn't, but, you know, that's the exam, you know, not good.
Right.
Yeah. And you can see people who don't get along in EMS. They argue in front of the patient, and, you know, behavior is often sarcastic and inappropriate. And I think oftentimes people are just afraid to bring it to management's attention because it draws attention to them as well. And there's always the he said, she said problem. So how would the workplace address a conflict when one is accusing the other of a harassment or some sort of aggressive behavior, and the other is accusing the same person with the same accusations?
Well, first, that's where policy is going to be really important, so that they both feel comfortable to say something. Because if there isn't a policy, they may feel that it's, you know, if they say something, it will make it worse for them. In a situation where it's two individuals, in a where they're, you know, they're not in a workplace where other people can't see, so you can't conduct an investigation in a situation like that, because nobody else really sees what's going on between the two of them. Versus, you know, an office environment where they would do an investigation and could find out from other people what the scenario, real situation is. It might be best just to split them up and give them new assignments. Now, I don't know a ton about the EMS industry, so I don't know how easy that would be. But, you know, because in an office, if two people are pointing fingers at each other, HR can conduct an investigation and ask everybody else. But in that scenario, that's not an option. So that's why I'm thinking splitting them up would be best.
Bill, which is it? I was going to say, well, this is a good segue to the one of the papers we were going to discuss about paramedics who are victims of abuse in the workplace. The lead author, which was Blair Bigham, and I'll just read a couple of quotes here from the study, because I think they're worth discussing, and I found them quite surprising. I was actually part of that survey. There were paramedics in Ontario and Nova Scotia who were surveyed about as to whether they had been victims of abuse, verbal abuse or intimidation or physical abuse, sexual harassment, those sorts of things. And it's interesting here, it lists that in terms of verbal abuse, 67.4% of EMS workers surveyed reported being verbally abused at some point or another. So by patients accounted for 62%, patient, family, or friends 36%, colleagues 20.8%, which surprised me. Yeah. Intimidation, they reported being intimidated by colleagues 45%, physical abuse by colleagues 3.8%, which in my mind is remarkably high, sexual harassment by colleagues 41%, and sexual assault by colleagues 14.8%, which is really disturbing. Does that sound consistent with what you see in other workplaces, Catherine?
You know, this is actually pretty high. Just that verbal abuse being reported by 67% of workers, that's a high number. In general, the research has really put it around 25 to 35%, you know, in different industries, and those two numbers come from surveys that were conducted here in America of over 5,000 people, so they weren't industry specific. You know, so in general, people, 1 in 4 people about reports being bullied at work. So to have that number at 67% for EMS workers is high. I would venture to guess that it has a lot to do with the stress, the nature of the job, which can be pretty stressful. And I would also imagine that's why so many patients or family and friends of patients are also verbally abusing the EMS, you know, as well, because it the stress definitely brings aggression out in people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I may be going out on a limb here. I can't recall the details of the survey, and I don't want to misquote parts of the study, but I'm just looking at the article here. And if I recall, I think it was based on whether you had experienced any of those things in the last, I think it was specifically the last 5 years. Now, I could be wrong on that, but because I remember there was one question about whether you'd been assaulted by a patient, and I have a couple of times, but it's was greater than 5 years ago, so I answered no to that question.
Yeah, to me, the verbal abuse percentage of, you know, by patients, while high, it's not surprising to me, just because of the number of patients that are under the influence of drugs or alcohol, or having some sort of behavioral mental health emergency, or dementia, that we're often, you know, our customers are oftentimes not people sort of in their right mind, if you will. But the 20% of the source of verbal abuse, 20% of it was from patient or from colleagues, was surprising to me. But I guess the part that was most shocking to me was the sexual harassment and sexual assault that originated from coworkers and really sort of points the fingers back at us. If we talk about safety, 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 but we're not even safe from each other potentially. So that was what's really worrisome to me in this report.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, and just to kind of piggyback on what you just said, the thing too is that if people are feeling intimidated by their coworkers, they're not focused 100% on their job. And so in an office, that means maybe they miss a deadline. But in the situation of an EMS, that means maybe they do something wrong that potentially harms the patient or makes the situation worse. So really makes addressing harassment or verbal abuse or bullying or any of those things extremely imperative in the medical, any medical setting, or healthcare setting, because you just can't do your job at 100% if you're feeling threatened by someone who's supposed to be working on your side.
And some of these things you can see, you can imagine how they might be a perception that changes over time. So, for example, someone who reports that they felt intimidated or as many as, 45% of respondents at one point felt intimidated by a colleague. If you're new and you're working with someone who's a seasoned paramedic, it's easy to feel intimidated just by, the tone of your partner's voice when they ask for a piece of equipment or ask you to do something. And it's not necessarily a sort of impending physical threat type of intimidation, but it's, in the intensity of the calls that we do, I can see how, a high percentage of people would report feeling intimidated, especially those who are new in the job.
I'm going to chime in here. Catherine, yeah. You said something earlier which I thought was interesting, as you talked about that the hierarchical structure sometimes that organizations have could promote or support bullying or this as being part of the structure. Certainly fire service, emergency medical services, law enforcement all certainly have paramilitary hierarchical structures to them, and those themselves might be conducive to setting up for less than an ideal situation. And sometimes old habits of hazing, I think is the easiest way to do it, is certainly exist within those services. So it sounds like, to me, one of the ways to change these cultures, because I don't think it can happen quickly, is probably, and I'm going to draw this back to the classroom, is how safe are our classrooms? And do we model and demonstrate within the classrooms, the right kind of environment to teach people what it's like, to have a safe working classroom so they know when something is wrong in the workplace?
I think that's a great point. And in addition to offering examples with, your own behavior as an instructor, but maybe a class or a portion of a class that covers the importance of respect and speaking to it, from the perspective of if you want to be an effective EMS, you have to treat each other with respect, otherwise you can hurt a patient, and maybe kind of put it in that light for them so that anybody who's prone to becoming aggressive once they get out of school understands that can be harmful. So I don't know if you're doing that already, but classes around effective communication could be helpful.
Yeah, I think it's probably underestimated is that I think as you look in society and you see how people choose to settle issues, that this need to develop more appropriate and effective ways to deal with conflicts, because once violence enters the picture, physical violence enters the picture, it's definitely a failure of the entire system or the organization or the culture when that happens. But I also, though, think that we probably cause equally as much harm by the verbal abuse, and probably how we handle it, again, I have to bring it back to where we have an area of influence is in the classroom. And I think that you bring up some excellent points about, talking about awareness, making them aware, and then also practicing, and then also having within your classroom those policies. I think also one of the other very important things to deal is, and this is a challenging one for educational institutions, is that if you are in a contractual agreement with a hospital or an agency where you know the culture is not safe for the student, I think you have to walk away from that contract.
In terms of placing students there for clinical experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. We dealt with an experience once where, as you're aware that I do this operating room teaching, and we did have a facility that we were dealing with once, and the primary contact there was just, he was just totally inappropriate, and we tried to bring it to his attention and also the attentions of his boss, and they just turned a blind eye to us. So we despite wanting to do it, we just stopped it because the environment was too hostile, we felt, for our employees to have to be in that situation.
I want to ask Bill a question, then have you follow up, Catherine. With, we talked a bit before, I mentioned, you could put people together and sort of, work it out, and then, or we could split them up. Bill, I'm sure over the years you've moved personnel around to different stations and different shifts to try to avoid those conflicts. Has it ever worked? And then I guess, Catherine, the follow-up would be that if you're going to try to move people around just so they don't come into contact with each other, what are some sort of best practices to keep that bully from not simply finding a new target?
Okay.
I'm just going to chime in here, and I'm going to say I listened to a recent episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast, and they very much dealt with this issue. And I thought it was very interesting is that they felt that, first of all, they wanted it to be handled at the lowest level possible because they felt that these leaders felt that once it came into their office, there was going to be a resolution. And, and they talked, for example, two people who couldn't work together on an ambulance in a specific shift. And usually it was one wanted to get away from the other. And I thought it was very interesting. And they said, they didn't give them that as an option. They said, if that ends up being the only thing we can do, you're both going, their answer was, is that if we can't resolve it, you're both going to a different shift in a different unit. So no one gets to stay and, in a sense, win in the situation. But I wish I could think off the top of my head which episode it is, but these were leaders talking about how they dealt with that intercrew conflict. And I was very much impressed with it because often what I see is sometimes as we move people under the premise that we're going to give them another chance with someone else,
right.
But sometimes all we're really doing is shifting the problem to someone else to solve.
Right.
And again, I don't think we can have a hard stance one way or the other, but it's clearly it's a conundrum that I bet you every fire service, every EMS agency, every police department that runs partners together in a squad car have to deal with.
Yeah. So, Catherine, what are your thoughts on how do you make that work when you are moving people?
Yeah, Bill, I think your comment that you made about making it so that nobody wins is a great, you're both going to have to move is a great point. And, in terms of best practices, well, back up, a lot of the research unfortunately shows that targets are, whoever's complaining that the other person is bullying them, the targets are the ones who often get transferred or moved. And then the bully does kind of win because the bully is the one with the problem, but the target's the one who gets transferred or let go. And so I think if you're going to transfer both of them, I think that's a great point. Whoever's being accused of bullying also needs to have some coaching around communication skills, and that needs to be tied to their performance. So, for example, Greg, if you and I work together and I'm bullying you and the manager says, okay, I'm going to split you guys up, Catherine, you're going to have to go through some communication skills coaching, and when I'm going to check in with you in 3 months and check in with your partner in 3 months and 6 months and 9 months. And if there isn't any change, then you're going to be disciplined or let go, because, and that's part of that whole no tolerance kind of a culture. So you can't just move people, because that's just a band-aid. You have to actually address it with them. And so I do coach people who have been identified as bullies, and that's the premise I coach them under is, you know, I offer information to the managers about what we're talking about and what I'm working with them on, and that way the manager can tie those skills that I'm teaching them into their performance. And if it doesn't change, then that person's going to be disciplined and or let go.
When you coach people that have been identified as a bully, do they usually own up to it right away, or does it take a lot of, like, this is what people say about you?
You know, usually what happens is they are aware, obviously, that people don't like their communication because they're being told that by their managers, but they often really don't have any idea why. So unfortunately, the media does paint bullies as these horrible, manipulative people who are, you know, out for blood, but that's not generally, the research doesn't support that profile. It's just that they are lacking communication skills, emotional intelligence, empathy, and so there is some denial just from the perspective of, I don't really get it. And so what I do is then interview all of their colleagues. And so I get permission from them, and I say, well, let me go out and figure out why people are saying this about you. And then I present that to them. And, you know, and I essentially provide them a report, and it's, you know, all anonymous, so they can't look at it and say, oh, I know who said this, that, and the other. But then they can read it, and they can see what people are actually saying. And that gives me something to build on in terms of what topics to cover as we're going through the coaching process. And they're upset. You know, I'm coaching someone right now, and she's cried in front of me several times because she doesn't want to have to go through this. It hurts her feelings that people feel that way about her. And she also cares very much about the organization, and that's why she's bullying. She's bullying people she feels are incompetent. And so she's frustrated by their supposed incompetence because she cares.
Catherine, do you think there is an inherent trait amongst bulliers that others are incompetent and they are the only ones who are competent?
Yes. Narcissism and kind of a desire for power are two things that are very highly linked, well-researched, and linked with bullying personalities. So, yes, you know, they care about the organization. They perceive themselves as high performers. And they perceive others as incompetent. So usually that's who they're picking on.
It's interesting because that's been my perception, and I certainly have no expertise in that area, but it's always struck me sort of when I look at people who seem, in my perception, seem to have bullying personalities, that they seem to judge everyone and everything else as wrong, and they seem to have a very one-dimensional view of things. And how difficult is it to change that kind of perception and behavior? Because I would imagine that's a lifetime of shaped perception, if you will, that you're now trying to undo.
Yeah, we focus on worrying about the things that you're supposed to be worrying about, and let the manager, you know, if somebody's incompetent, let them fall on their face, and then their incompetence will come through. And that's kind of how I phrase it, really. It's just, you're the only one who perceives that person to be that incompetent. You know, nobody else sees that person as incompetent. So let's talk about where that perception's coming from. For example, the person I'm coaching now, she feels like she cleans up this person's messes a lot. He makes mistakes and she has to clean them up. So I said, don't clean them up. Let him cost the organization money, as hard as that might be. But the only way that your manager is going to see him as incompetent as you do is if that happens. And hopefully what will happen is he won't cause, you know, because I don't think he's that incompetent as she thinks he is. So, you know, she'll eventually learn to sort of back off from it. So that's been the main focus of our conversations is how can you let go of control over this person? Because he's your peer, he's not your manager, or you're not his manager. You have to respect him as a peer.
So. And how do you go about, other than policy, how do you go about encouraging people in the workplace or students, for example, to report their feelings of intimidation or harassment or report any incidents in a way where they feel safe?
Yeah, you know, I always, and this is actually the center of the book that's coming out in the summer, is Four Targets, and a lot of it is the logistics of how to report successfully and get the help you need. I think what happens is a lot of times people go to their manager, or if you're a student, maybe go to the a leader in the organization and say, you know, my teacher's bullying me or my peer is bullying me. And the conversation gets really focused on I'm being bullied, I'm hurt, you know, and the conversation is about them. You know, me, I feel this way, me. And I think that's why a lot of times targets are seen as the problem and they're told, you know, we'll go deal with it, suck it up, and get back to work or get back to class. So the biggest piece of advice, there's two big pieces of advice. First, collect as much documentation as you possibly can. So if there's emails or things that are tangible that prove there's inappropriate or unprofessional behavior, you know, hang on to those. Also buy a journal and write down every time an incident occurs. The biggest piece of that, though, is that the journal is meant to be facts only. So write down who was there, what was said, you know, where you were standing, what time it was, what day it was, anybody that saw anything around your feelings about those scenarios does not belong in that journal. So it needs to be very fact-based, because that's what HR or leaders respond to is the back. So when you're reporting it, you need to focus on the other person and their behavior and try to avoid saying I as often as possible or me as often as possible, so that the conversation is very focused on this person's behavior is unprofessional. Here's a journal that has a whole list of times that person was unprofessional or inappropriate or aggressive. Here are some emails that prove that this person's behavior is unprofessional and aggressive. I am asking for your help, you know. Those are the two biggest things. Have the journal and the evidence, and then focus the conversation on the other person, not on you.
Now, the question that always seems to come up on management side when someone reports something of that nature is, what did you do to stop this? Did you tell them that you didn't like what they were saying or doing? And so what happens then if you're the victim and you just don't have the courage to say to someone, stop talking to me that way, or you offend me, or you make me feel intimidated, and then you go to management and complain? Do you still have a leg to stand on when you haven't done anything about it with that person who's bullying you?
That's a good question, because my answer is going to be different than what you'd hear if you had a different guest on. So a lot of workplace bullying experts will say you should not stand up to the bully because it will make the bullying worse. However, I advocate for standing up to the bully at least once, because as someone who was an HR manager, I would much rather hear that you did try to resolve it on your own first. Before coming to me. So I think that you should find it within yourself and say it, say something. And, you know, one way to do that is there's the three steps of assertiveness, where you state what the problem is, you state the solution, you validate, state the problem, state the solution. So by validating, you might say something like, look, I understand that I annoy you or you don't like my work ethic. However, the way you're speaking to me is unprofessional, and in the future you need to speak with me or speak to me with respect. And if you can get those three sentences out or those three steps out, at least you've given it a go. And it probably isn't going to help. It's not going to make the bully stop, but your complaint will be much more valid If you can say, I did try to resolve this on my own and it didn't work, the person is still mistreating me.
You know, the one thing we haven't talked about, and Abby, I'm going to survey the room and ask Greg and Bill if they've had experience with this, is as educators, have you been bullied by students and what have you done about it? I'll start with Greg.
Just sort of the nature of the work I have, you know, most of my communication with students is electronic, that I receive like emails and course evaluations.
But you do a lot of public speaking, Greg.
I do a lot of public speaking.
And you've done lots of classic face-to-face classroom teaching as well.
I think what I notice maybe more in the sort of conference setting is the sort of like preamble when somebody asks a question, of the sort of long preamble of why they know more about the subject than I do and they're more qualified to speak on it. It's sort of like I need to first knock you down a couple notches before I ask a question that you're probably not capable of answering. But I don't get that very often. I'm routinely mouth agape at what paramedics will write in the text area of an evaluation of an online education course, and the language they'll use, maybe twice a week, like stunned.
That's true. Sometimes if they don't exhibit that hostility outwardly, they put it in their evaluation.
Right,
later.
And I just can't imagine if I was standing in their fire station or EMS station or training academy that they would use those same words face-to-face, but maybe they would. So that's my recent experience.
How about you, Bill?
Oh, you know, that's an interesting question, and I would have to say that nothing that I remember in the live thing. I would agree that people sometimes will write amazing things in their evaluation, but again, usually the challenges is what they write doesn't answer the issue of why do they really feel that way. You know, they may complain about something, but they don't really give a thing, okay, how could this have been better? How could this have been different or anything along those lines? So I think that that's a challenge. But I have a tendency, and I've always had a tendency, if anything, I think in my earlier education, as an early educator, I probably myself was more of a bully, whether I like to admit to it or not. And I certainly think I've become a more effective educator over time as I've matured and I've realized the mistakes of my past. But I think someone assessing me from the outside may have, if they looked at me early on, they would have thought I was, you know, very autocratic and very controlling. And to some people that can be very almost bullying in its own nature. And then I've changed a great deal over time.
Part of the reason I ask is because I know I have been bullied. And in most cases, I felt quite comfortable handling it and managed to sort of squash it before it got any worse. But I can think of two occasions where I've had students who were bullies, and I have to confess I felt it very awkward to deal with it, and frankly didn't, in some cases, really didn't want to deal with it and just wanted the semester over and to see the end of them, and that was it. So be curious to have another show with a group of educators and find out how many of them have been bullied in the classroom.
Yeah. Catherine, I have, at the outset, I asked Bill about, you know, are there more tornadoes or are they just better reported? And I wonder about, you know, we see news stories about Facebook and text messaging, and especially maybe at the high school level, of students using those tools to bully one another. Is that widespread, or is it just some sensational news stories? You know, should we be really thinking that there's a strong likelihood that that's happening, or is it just much more likely that it's the actual, like, language and physical posturing that people might use in the same room?
I think there's always been bullying, but, you know, the media has definitely sensationalized stories about bullying. I just watched a documentary yesterday, actually, about a suicide where someone committed suicide because they were bullied at work, supposedly. And this documentarian did some research and did a documentary around the fact that he probably wasn't bullied, and you know, someone put that story out there and ran with it. So I don't know. Does that answer your question?
I'm just thinking about just sort of like the high level of involvement in Facebook by high school, college age students, and is there widespread bullying happening there, or is it just some very sensational stories?
I think it's probably a combination of both. I mean, anytime essentially Facebook or the internet offers one more communication channel, you know, so that's just one more way you could be bullied in addition to having your personal space invaded or having someone yell at you while you're standing there in person. In terms of work, you know, we're connected to the internet quite a bit more often. A lot of us have phones that where we get our emails. So if your boss is bullying you, for example, they can bully you over email at midnight, you know, if you happen to check your phone before you go to bed or something like that. So I think the technology gives bullies the opportunity to bully more often and more frequently just because they have more access.
And then the other thing that's on my mind, and I don't know why I have such a long list of questions here, but this is a fascinating topic for me. If we took out to the extreme that, you know, abuse out to the extreme end of it is a school or a workplace shooting. And have you looked at that sort of extreme end of workplace violence?
Well, I do. One thing I want to say, I don't have a specific, you know, well, in 80% of cases, this is what happened kind of a thing. But I will say that I have been working closely with a company called Awarity, and they have a software that they can install on your, you know, or it's a button basically that they put on your website. And then anybody who feels like they're being bullied or thinks that there something may occur in terms of violence, you know, they can click on that button and report it anonymously. And he sent me some statistics. And one of his statistics was that 70% of acts of violence in school, ages K through 12, at least one person knew that was going to happen. So if you take a shooting, for example, in a school, there was at least one person who knew that they were going to show up at school and you know, some student was going to have a gun. So I think you know, because we're social, things don't happen in a vacuum, that there are signs that somebody who's bullying could escalate into violence, or that a target could escalate into being so frustrated that they would come back with violence. And that's where, you know, again, policies are in place. But I think this software that Awarity has is pretty important, because people don't want to stand up. They're scared to speak out and say, I saw a gun, or the person told me they might do this. It's scary for them to tell their teachers. If you're in K through 12, or if you're an adult, it's scary to report that to managers.
Can you humor me with one final question, guys?
Sure.
And here's the thing of like that I spend some time puzzling over of, you know, it's sort of an achievement society. You know, there's a lot of pressure of like, you know, how do you tell the difference between no means try harder and no really means no? And I think of this in the context of a bunch of things. You know, it might be just somebody who wants to come work at a certain place, and, you know, or they want to achieve something, become a musician or publish a book, or, you know, get a date with somebody. And how do you puzzle out the difference between no means try harder and no really means no?
Okay. I think you've jumped us.
Okay. I'm sorry. Maybe I should write a book on that.
Yeah, sorry, I can't help you there.
Well, maybe the audience, if you have some thoughts on that, because I think there is a connection there, especially with intimidation and violence and domestic abuse relationships, of sometimes the pursuer or the abuser hears no, and they hear it as, well, try harder. versus no really means no. And it's something that I think about in just sort of some different contexts. So listeners, if you have any thoughts on that, you could go to facebook.com/EMSEducast. Rob, maybe you can help us and raise some final point or question that doesn't land with a big thud.
The reality is, I think there's, you know, this paper clearly showed that there is a lot of abuse that happens in the workplace, both in EMS, both from patients, from family members, from bystanders, and from in the education circles, from you know, educators bullying students to students bullying educators. And I think one of the things Bill and I have developed over the years, and Catherine sort of touched on this earlier, is a certain level of emotional intelligence. And that's something I think largely comes with time and experience. And one of the things I try to instill and model with my students is how to deal with people who are hostile towards you, either coworkers or patients, and not to take it, you know, with coworkers a little bit different from patients, but with patients, not to take it personally, and to rise above it and maintain a certain calm and a certain disconnection from, you know, what the kind of verbal abuse are hurling at you. I think with coworkers, it's a whole different story. I think you have to stand up to that and do something about it, take action with that. But in terms of the, you know, the student who's preparing to go out in the field, I think it's educators. We have to model that high level of emotional intelligence and that behavior of take offense from no one and offend no one.
Thanks, Rob. Bill, how about you?
Well, I really do think it's necessary for us to think about educating people, whether it be in initial education or continuing education. And I think what we really need to do is teach people how to de-escalate even themselves in the process of conversations. And the way I like to do it is that sometimes, you know, people choose words that are like gasoline on a fire instead of choosing water on a fire. And I think that we need to teach people how to use more water and less gasoline, because I sometimes wonder, are things escalated in the, whether it be with your partner, your spouse, a family, or a patient, how much do we contribute to throwing gasoline versus throwing water on the situation? So I truly do believe that we have a responsibility. And I think one of the ways to start this is through a process of education, awareness, examples, and then solutions to how to avoid that.
Well said, Bill. I really like that metaphor of throwing water or gasoline. Catherine, as we wrap up here, do you have some closing thoughts that you'd like to share?
You know what? I'm going to share something that's maybe not wholly on topic here, but I actually in December was in a pretty major accident. I won't get into too many details, but I ended up getting picked up by EMS, and I was in shock. And while I was on that ride from my accident, and probably verbally abused the people who were trying to help me. So I would just like to apologize to them. You know, I read the this research that you sent over, and I was probably a patient who was taking out my being so scared for myself and my situation. You know, want to apologize to those two gentlemen who helped me publicly. And, you know, just in terms of everything we've talked about, I agree with Bill. We need to make sure that anybody going out into the working world is getting all of the tools they need to be effective, and that those tools do include emotional intelligence and communication in addition to everything else that students are learning. So hopefully we can bring those topics into the workplace or into the education.
Well, I just want to share that for me, nothing quite brightens my day like when the boss calls into the office and says, come into the office, and you think, oh boy, what's this going to be? And then you get there and the boss says, I just want to share with you this thank you card we got from one of your patients that took the time to write in about the care they received. So that might be a good way to clear your conscience of anything
I'll
that might
have track them down.
happened in December. Because for me, that was always just the best thing, is to hear from a patient or their family. I wanted to ask, is your book already available for pre-order, like at Amazon or somewhere like that we could put in the show notes?
You know, it's not. Not quite yet. We're still in the editing phase. But it's called Back Off, 105 Things You Need to Know to End Workplace Bullying. So keep your eyes peeled for it. It'll be out here in the summertime.
Okay. Well, when it does become available, make sure you let us know. And quick again, if you want to mention the websites where listeners can connect with you, we'll make sure to get those in the show notes as well.
Sure. My company is called Civility Partners, and that's at civilitypartners.com. If you're interested in learning about workplace bullying, you can go to noworkplacebullies.com. And both of those websites have links to my blog as well, so lots of information on the blog too. So thank you for having me, and always a pleasure to talk about this topic with other people who are interested.
Well,
in it, you know?
We really appreciate your time, and it is a very interesting topic for me and Bill and Rob as well. And listeners, we'd love to hear about your experiences, like Rob talked about, either, you know, have you been bullied by a student, and how did you manage that? And, you know, one way you could do that is facebook.com/EMSEducast, or even simply sending us an email, or posting in the comments for this show at EMSEducast.com. On behalf of Bill Toon and Rob Terrio, this has been Greg Freeze for the EMS Educast.